WFSU FM now presents a delayed broadcast of the August 21st, 2013 luncheon meeting of the Capital Tiger Bay Club. This program was recorded at Tallahassee's Donald L. Tucker Civic Center. And now here's Capital Tiger Bay Club Vice President Steve Burtman.
Can I get your attention, please? Can I get your attention, please? My name is Boss Hogg, and I want to be your mayor. Just a couple of announcements. We're accepting new applications, so make sure you see Jeff, get an application and fill it out. Except for you, Dottie. Not happening today. Open up your calendars. Make sure you have note down for October 17th. We'll be Tiger at Bay here in the recently remodeled Tallahassee Leon County Civic Center. Charles Pierce will be the featured speaker. Make sure you talk to Tim Center about who he is and why he will be funny. Also remember, Laughingstock will be here December 5th. That's December 5th. Write it down, put it down. It'll be a great show. A couple news and notes from the area. The Tallahassee Visitors Bureau has announced a new slogan for Tallahassee. Tallahassee in August, where good times go to die. Okay, folks, if it doesn't get better than that, it's gonna get really, really bad here. Even the Dream Defenders, an organization based and created to fight racism and sometimes common sense, couldn't even make it through Tallahassee in the month of August. Ooh. Is this thing on? Okay. Right. CFO Jeff Outwater got an early Christmas present this week when we learned Allie Braswell, who opened his CFO candidacy on Friday, but closed it on Monday due to his unnatural love of bankruptcy. He had three, folks, three. One, two, three. But all is not lost for Allie. I understand he's relocating to Detroit to lead that city back to greatness. And frankly, if this is the best that the Florida Democrats can do, I would say welcome back to D.C., Steve. Tea Party favorite Senator Ted Cruz announced this week that he would renounce his Canadian citizenship. The nation and the people of Canada thanked him. On a local note, the bar Level 8, a new drink commemorating the arrest of Elizabeth Mack, Tallahassee Democrat reporter, for drunken and resisting arrest. The Mack attack, as the drink is known, was greeted with much fanfare and celebration. And I would hope you would give a big round of applause for Tallahassee's new Girl About Town reporter, Bill Cotterell.
I may have to start drinking if I'm going to be the Girl About Town. I don't drink. Our guest today, you're all aware you didn't just happen to be here. If you didn't know who our luncheon speaker was, I'm glad to see there were people out front to remind you as you arrived. Steve Sutherland literally burst upon the political scene of North Florida about 4 years ago. He had a five-way primary to go up against Congressman Alan Boyd, who was in a lot more trouble than we thought at that time. But driving in today, I did think of Alan because exactly 4 years ago, in the summer of 2009, he went around the district and had a bunch of town hall meetings at which the number one topic, of course, was national health care. And there were people very much like the people today out there to welcome him with hostile signs and some heckling in his town hall appearances, which lately Mr. Sutherland has found that this has become his lot in seeking re-election. And this time he has a much better known opponent than Alan Boyd did 4 years ago. In fact, as you're aware, Gwen Graham is campaigning hard against him. Her family recently sold the Washington Post for $248 million, all of which they are pumping into her campaign for Congress. And Steve, as you're also probably aware, is a funeral home operator. And really, newspapers and funeral homes have a lot more in common, except that when our clients die off, they don't pay us anymore. But and finally, his race, the 2nd District of Florida, has been targeted by the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. It's one of several Florida districts that they say they're going to take back. And I've always felt being targeted by the DCCC was a little like hearing Vanderbilt brag on how they're going to run the SEC this year. But it is always a pleasure to hear Steve Sutherland. He's a one thing I noticed about him very early is he doesn't like to be called a congressman. He calls himself a representative. He said he wants to be representative of the people, not a man of Congress. And that's, in all my years of covering politics, I hadn't heard anyone quite so modest about it before. And so today, let's give a Tiger Bay welcome to a man with so much to be modest about, our Congressman Steve Sutherland.
Thank you very much, Bill. And I remember the first time I met Bill, because I grew up really reading his stories, and I want to thank you for the introduction, and I also want to commend you because I think you are a credit to journalism. And I'm trusting I'll have the last word on this one. But I do want to thank you. I found Bill to be we've not agreed each and every time I've read something, but I have found this out that Bill always has given us an opportunity to share our side of the story. And I think that good journalism owes that to the reader, to give you an opportunity to share your side of the story. Not that that will carry the day, but to be able to share your side of the story, I think, is very, very good. I hope my goal, you referenced laughingstock, my goal is to not be that today. I know the second time, might be the third time that I've been privileged to step before this group and to speak. And I want to say thank you for allowing us the opportunity to stand here and so close to the burning embers, so close to the fire. I appreciate the opportunity. I think that you talked about a lot of things, and Steve, in your opening, and you talked about bankruptcy and things that we don't necessarily like, but this is the place where good times come to die in August. Well, I can assure you that Washington shares that same characterization. So it is nice to be here. It is the hottest place I have ever been. If you've been to Washington, you know it's built inside of a bowl. There's no breeze. The one thing I love about Northwest Florida is we're so close to the Gulf and we have a good breeze. If this is where good times come to die, I have recognized three licensed funeral directors in the crowd today. So we actually four. We got Mr. Beggs here, and so I think we've got everybody that we need on deck in case that were to happen. So I just don't want to be the subject of that. I will say this, Bill. You also alluded to my current situation or the crowds that I'm facing these town hall meetings compared to Mr. Boyd. I think there is a similarity perhaps in the number of people that are there, but I think that's where the commonalities really end. I have found that, because I attended some of those a couple years ago, they were a little hostile, I think. So it's part of the game. It's part of the deal where we have to step before those we represent and talk about our votes, talk about our political or our legislative initiatives, and that is only right. I will say there is an effort by some to make it to where I don't want to do this. That's okay. We are, as funeral directors, we step right in the middle of volatile situations all the time. Conflict resolution is part of the deal, especially when you inject grief and money into the same area. And right now, there's a lot of grief in this country. Right now, there's a lot of pain in this country. The thing that aggravates me is I think that much of the pain, much of the hurt that I see is not because of an act of God. A lot of it's man-made. And so I ran 3 years ago because I, as a owner of a small business, someone who has sweated a payroll, someone who has actually paid payroll to our team of wonderful professionals and not got a paycheck. That's the benefit of ownership, to make sure you care for your people. And so that's the example I had with my dad and the example I had with my grandfather. Understanding the burdensome regulations that are thrown upon us that sometimes just don't make sense, because the city inspector asked us the same questions last week that the state inspector is asking us today, and it's going to be the same questions that the federal guy is going to ask next week. Small business, I was asked just a few moments ago by the TV station, you know, what can we do for small business? Well, if the federal government would get its boot off the neck of small business, I think that's the best thing we could do to improve the economy. Small businesses make up 80% of our economy, not Fortune 500 companies. Small businesses. One thing I've learned about Tallahassee is you have a tremendous base of small businesses. We were at a pest control company yesterday that is about to celebrate their 50th anniversary. Two sons that are partners together to continue that which their father began. We got there at 6:30 in the morning yesterday to meet their team that were getting in those yellow trucks and going to all points of Leon County to make sure that you do not have pests in your house. I mean, that's God's work. And I will tell you, when I got there, I was amazed at the professionalism that I saw. They greeted me out front. We went inside, happy people, at 6:30 in the morning, and this was their routine. We wanted to see a lineup, okay, of how they are there to greet their frontline ambassadors for their company. And we talked to them about where they were from. We talked to each one of them. We shook the hands of all 50 of their employees, and then we watched them go off in a 360-degree circle all around Leon County. So when we got inside after they left, we got inside and we met their office staff and the people that have been a part of scheduling and bookkeeping and HR and advertising and all the things that they do as a small business. There was an enormous pride by everyone from the technician to the bookkeeper to the HR director all the way to the owners. And there's one thing that they are coming to work and finding each and every day other than pesky termites. They're finding an environment of uncertainty. And that does not make Americans happy. It doesn't make small businesses happy. Especially if you're trying to perpetuate a family business, multi-generational family business, while you're getting kicked in the teeth the whole time for the success and the jobs you're creating and the service you're providing to your community. So we are spending this time traveling around the district. It's not just about town hall meetings and giving people an opportunity to scream profanities at me. By the way, I don't think that makes a great politician. Discretion is the better part of valor. And I think that, but it is important. What does make a good elected official is someone who will listen. And I think we have proven that we will come to Leon County and we will sit down, and I see some of your commissioners here today, your county commissioners, your city commissioners, and I will tell you that we have enjoyed a relationship with them. Now, we perhaps don't agree on everything. Well, not perhaps. We won't agree on everything. But the one thing that I think they would have to admit is that they are treated with respect, and that their agenda in looking out for the betterment of the people and the citizens of Leon County has become our agenda. And so whether we're fighting the state of Georgia and the Corps of Engineers on the Grady Dam issue to make sure that you have water, or whether we're fighting against NOAA because the city paid accidentally over $250,000 of money that for many, many years there had been an unsuccessful attempt to get that money back to the taxpayers of Tallahassee, or whether we're talking about FEMA helping us because of stormwater problems that we faced and the erosion that we experienced on Capitol Circle. If that is important to the constituents in Leon County, then it is imperative that that become a priority of the congressional office that I have been given the responsibility to oversee. We are very proud that we have moved the ball on all of those three items, and there's other items that we're working. We met yesterday with three of your county commissioners, and to protect them, I want to be clear, not at the same time. We saw some of the great things that are going on here that are as a result of vision and that are a result of true representation. It is imperative that we work hard with your voices at the local level. It's also important that we meet with the leaders of your great institutions here, that we meet with your leaders at the hospital. And the great work you're doing on what we've got to do to support, your residency programs and making sure that we get enough slots in our program here, because the largest benefactor of that program are the rural counties. Because doctors don't go back and practice where they went to med school, but they do go back to the area where they serve their residency, and that's what they call home. And so, therefore, the benefactor are our rural counties. Jefferson, Madison, Wakulla, Gadsden. And so you see these medical clinics in rural counties that are staffed by wonderful professionals that have an oath to care for the health care needs of people. And because of your concerns, okay, and TMH and the concerns of that residency program in Florida, on a larger scale, getting more of those slots, because the geographical shift of population from the north to the south, we also need to shift the number of those slots. I can make an argument that if we can pick up two congressional seats in redistricting, that really give proof to over a million people coming to Florida and leaving northern states, then New York doesn't need all those slots because all the people are down here. And so it is through working here with your representatives and your institution that we've learned about that issue. And we have done what we needed to do to support that adjustment. And so we will continue to do that. Also over to Florida State and FAMU. You know what? I got to tell you, the research that is being done at FAMU is one of your best kept secrets. It is amazing the research that is being done there, the number of patents that are there, the smart, brilliant people that are doing everything they can to make sure that our quality of life and the quality of life of people along the ACF and down into the Apalachicola Bay is certain. Florida State, the Mag Lab, unbelievable what you're doing. That is an economic development jewel. The people that fly into Tallahassee. And by the way, now you have direct flights from Washington, D.C.A. into Tallahassee. Praise the Lord.
Nowhere else, but yeah.
Well, we're working on that. I will say this, that to not have direct service from your nation's capital to the state capital of the state that oversees the 14th largest economy in the world, is insanity. And so we're very pleased with that. And so I think you are as well. But no matter where we go here, we're seeing positive things. I am of the opinion that Florida 2 and Northwest Florida will really be perhaps the point of the spear to move our economy out of the state we've currently been in for the last several years because of the hard work and the ingenuity and the vision of the citizens of this area. I could not be more proud of what I see here. And I want to say this has not been a city perhaps that has been inviting or kind to someone of my political stance. But I have found pleasantly surprised the respect by which we have been received. You are sometimes unfairly characterized by those that are screaming the loudest and yelling profanity. And though I used to think, okay, that made up a bunch of the population here, that is not true. Even those who disagree with us, we have found on both sides of the political spectrum, have treated us well. And our promise to you is that our values of freedom, respect, discipline, excellence, honesty, courage, and loyalty will be the order of the day. We will treat you with respect. And you mentioned truth. Truth is pretty important. And there's a big debate. What is true? And that's a big debate in Washington. What is true? And so I have my ideas, and so does everybody else there. But let me say this. I have found, though, in my life, truth is typically consistent. It was the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. To me, the definition of untruth is something that changes from yesterday, today, and tomorrow. It's hard to put your finger on something that is moving all the time. And based upon the belief in relativism as opposed to absolute truth, it's hard for a business owner to have certainty and to go out to a bank and to borrow money and to face the challenges that they face if there is no certainty, if there is no truth. And so right now, it's scary that one truth I have found emanating out of Washington, D.C., is the variable nature and the relativism of their truths. And that's an aggravating thing. I had never been, as you know, in an elected position before. I ran 3 years ago based upon my belief, based upon my understanding of truth, and based upon the truth that our founding fathers gave us. What a great country that we can do this. They don't do what we do in France. They don't. This is an amazing country that we have representation that you can elect who you want to go represent you. And that's, by the way, that true representation and the spirit of representation is the exact reason that I voted against sequestration. Sequestration. Everybody's heard sequestration. 2% cuts across the board. I'm a manager, by the way. I've managed people and I've managed challenges. Why would I only want to defund a bad program by 2%? I wouldn't. I would want to take more than 2% by the department that is off target, that is not meeting the objectives of that target, that perhaps whose fundamental need and goals have changed totally. They're not delivering value to the American people. I want to take those resources and move those over to another program or another department who in every way are blowing and going and delivering great value to the American people. So sequestration said across the board cuts, 2%. That's a lazy way to govern. If you don't want to be a leader that has to make hard decisions, then don't go. Another thing I disagreed with sequestration, and you're going to hear a lot about this, and we're going to tell you the truth about sequestration, is it created a super committee. A super committee made up of 12 individuals, 12 people that got to Congress the same way I did, who represent 700,000 people just like I do. There is no way that I'm ever going to take Florida 2's voting card and give to another member who got to Washington, D.C. the same way I did. No one there deserves two votes. And if you condense 435 down to 12, no one deserves five votes, six votes, whatever the committees, the ideas of super committees would ever be, and their makeup of numbers, no one ever deserves that. Okay, and there's sometimes the leadership has more votes than individual members. Look, we all got there the same way. We represent the same number of people. So, and by the way, also in the sequestration, it was a mandatory cut to healthcare providers who offer Medicare to their patients of $150 billion. I guess TMH has an opinion on that one, I would imagine. I think that we have an issue. We have the fastest growing segment of our population, seniors. 10,000 individuals a day are going into Social Security and Medicare. 10,000 a day. I read recently a report, I believe by the New England Journal of Medicine, this was several months ago, that by 2020, 7 years from now, the United States will have a shortage of physicians that total 92,500. So here's the deal. The fastest growing part of our population are the people that need medical care the most. And we have the task now, our doctors, our healthcare providers have the task now of serving those people with 92,000, 93,000 less doctors in 7 years. Look, I may not be the sharpest, but that doesn't work. That doesn't work. And so therefore, we've got to make sure that we have a better system. I think the goal should always be to make sure that every American has access to affordable healthcare that is provided by a professional, and that no bureaucrat stands in between the relationship they have with their doctor. If that's the goal. And by the way, that's going to take a bipartisan effort. People that can talk civilly to communicate to each other and listen to each other in solving the problem. Washington, D.C. is a very combative, very polarizing place. So I would have to give you the edge in Tallahassee when it comes to those good times in October. It's a little cooler here, too, by the way. But when we go back, just a point or two before we field some questions. One of the things that we dealt with in Congress or are dealing with is a farm bill that was in the news a lot. I served on the Agriculture Committee in my first term. We marked up a farm bill in the first term through the committee, but did not get that to the floor. It was bipartisan. Out of committee. Perhaps one of the committees that is most bipartisan is the Ag Committee. You have a lot of people that come from rural America serving on that committee. You have multiple farmers on both sides of the aisle. They understand farm policy. Now, many, many, many decades ago, we had Congress, in their wisdom, chose to combine the Farm Bill with the nutrition title, the SNAP program, better known by many as food stamps. And so therefore, over the last several years, we have seen an increase in the dollar amount of our nutrition program, of food stamps. And so now, currently today, food stamps make up 80% of the farm bill. So therefore, being able to analyze both of those programs on their merit, both of those programs on the positive, negative, where reforms need to be, you have to deal with other parts that sometimes muddy the waters. And you can't analyze, I think, objectively because of other concerns in other programs. I believe it's much harder to deal with problem solving if it is characterized by chaos of other issues. Isolate a problem, ask the questions, where have we been? What do we know? What are our options in moving forward? Critical analysis. And so therefore, there was an effort to get the farm bill done. We separated those two in the House of Representatives. And we passed, before we came home, we passed the farm portion, the farm policy of the farm bill. Now, since then, I've been a part of three meetings, and I'm a part of the organizational group, working group, to get the nutrition portion to the floor. Let me be clear. There are programs that are designed to help the vulnerable in our society. It has always been a part of our country. That has always been a priority of individuals in our country. So we are going to bring a nutrition title to the floor so that we can do what the programs were designed to do. But a part of that effort was an amendment that I put on the floor that perhaps has not been truthfully told to you. And it was a work requirement for able-bodied people. Now, let me be clear, because some of my friends in the media have not been able to do this right. Excluding, and it's only 16 pages long, so it's not a massive 2,000-page bill. 16 pages. It's called the Pride Act. Excluding children. Excluding the disabled. Excluding seniors. I think that's got it covered. But if you are able-bodied, and you are of working age, and you are mentally, physically, psychologically able to work, here's the requirement. Either work 20 hours a week, be trained to work 20 hours a week, look for employment 20 hours a week, and if that's not working for you, then volunteer in your community 20 hours a week. Now, if Elder Care, which is a fabulous, fabulous, fabulous organization right here in Leon County that delivers meals on wheels to shut-ins and seniors. A couple weeks ago, we were privileged and asked by them to come and give awards for service. And we handed out 10-year awards and 20-year awards. 25, I think, was one. 30-year awards for volunteerism. But there was one award we gave out that was 40-plus years of service of delivering food to the vulnerable. Those two individuals who received those awards were all over 80 years old. They sacrificed their time, their vehicle, the gas. I'm sure on hot days, cold days, arthritic days, they volunteered. They made a conscious decision to be a conscious contributor to society. I was in a hospital over in Jackson County on Thursday. I walked into this hospital to see all the incredible things that they are doing to serve this rural community, and I am met at the front door by three of the most precious white-haired ladies called Pink Ladies. And they set the pace of the hospital. They greeted me there with a smile. They talked to me about their newly renovated lobby store and how they oversee it and how they're thrilled to volunteer. My point is asking people who are in a position of transition, who perhaps have a part-time job, or people who are looking for a job or being trained for a job, or if they can't, to at least volunteer to be productive. As a result of your productivity, we will, for the able-bodied individuals, we will feed you. By the way, this is not that controversial. We polled this. 82% of Americans believe in what I just stated, and 70% of Democrats. That was my amendment. It was not reported to you as such, because, my goodness, they didn't talk about those exemptions of children and disabled and seniors. But if you look at my body of work prior to being a member of Congress, you would know that having served as 5 years the chairman of the Early Learning Coalition of Northwest Florida and taking care of the children's educational needs from birth to five, making sure that they're ready to learn by the time they start kindergarten. By the way, those are children of the working poor. You cannot even access those services without a job. You have to be at 150% of the poverty level or below. I've committed my life to helping the vulnerable. I have delivered Meals on Wheels, both now through elder care and over in Panama City with the Council on Aging. I spent time on the foreign mission field in the rice paddies of the Philippines to go help the vulnerable. If you state that I don't care for people, then you have to argue my entire body of work and that of my father and that of my grandfather. And I don't think that holds water. We've got to secure these programs, but we have to reform them to make sure that they are in place to help the vulnerable. And we also have to have the courage to reward people for earned success. It's the only system where the poor have a chance. Because in socialism, Marxism, communism, if you're born poor, you will die poor. It is through the ability of earned success that the poor have a chance to enjoy upward mobility, learn a trade, hone their skills, dream about their passions, and one day they are not a entry-level employee. One day they are at the closing table buying the business that gave them a chance. They should not be penalized for their sweat equity, their effort, their sacrifice. We got to get back to the basics. Washington, in many ways, is in the way. Now, I want to answer some questions, and I'm sure there are some that want to ask questions. So we want to, Steve, you tell me how we do this, and we will proceed.
Okay. Well, first, I want to make sure that I apologize to my head table. I totally forgot to announce all of you during my rush to actually get this done. And for that, I do really, really apologize. I do want to make sure that I notice Forrest Watson. He's a new member. And Sally West, also a new member. So once again, I apologize. I'd also like to give you this expensive, wonderful tumbler from Capital Tiger Bay as a gift for thank you very much
wow.
for coming.
Thank you.
And as a note to our public radio gentlemen out there, Tiger Bay members can ask questions. Please come up to the microphone and feel free to come up and let this gentleman have your thoughts and views.
Representative, I wanted to ask you about the Restore Act and
yes.
What you're doing about implementation on that.
The Restore Act is a piece of legislation.
Sure. Any updates on timeline?
Yes.
You may have heard about.
Yes. Part of the Restore Act, and you all, I think, are aware. I'm going to assume that you're aware of the Restore Act, taking the BP fine dollars because of the violations of the Clean Water Act. Was probably the most significant piece of legislation that I was privileged to be a part of. Senator Nelson was a part of it as well. Senator Rubio was. And so what we have done in the Restore Act, inside there was a requirement that the Department of Treasury had 180 days from the signing of that law to give us a plan and the framework by which counties and states would submit requests for projects. There was also the requirement or the need for a federal judge to determine the actual amount of that fine, where 20% of those fine dollars would be going into the Treasury and 80% of the fine dollars would go into the restore function, and those dollars would flow to the five southern border, the Gulf Coast states for restoration. Restoration both environmentally as well as restoration economically. So an update on where we are there, because that's got to happen in order for us to be able to pursue some of these wonderful ideas that we're hearing around, especially the eight disproportionate counties in North Florida. The administration is well past the 180 days as required in the bill, signed by the president, to be delivered to the delivery of that framework. We're well past the 180 days. The Secretary of Treasury, and now we've had a turnover there. So, you know, we're still waiting for that. I am very concerned because the administration has hinted a couple times of focusing on the fines going through the NERDA process. Now, there's a problem with that, and I want to be I want to educate people on the problem with that. Any fines that an oil company or any party who is guilty of being a part of the incident, the Deepwater Horizon, the Macondo well explosion, if their fines go through the NERDA process, they are not tax deductible. They're tax deductible. If the fines go through the Restore Act, they're not. Now, I hear a lot of people scream at me about tax deductions and all these things for big corporate companies. If that's the case, then urge this administration to funnel those fines not through NERDA, but through the law that was passed on a bipartisan basis, signed by the president, that I think will flow directly to the counties and the states most affected. Now, the federal judge issue, the federal judge has yet to give us a final ruling on the amount of the fine. So those are the two things that have to happen. What we are noticing is on the county level, we're noticing that counties, and I know we got Brian Delocious here, and Brian is the president of FAC, which is Florida Association of Counties. They're working as we speak to create restore advisory councils in their community, made up of various stakeholders in a community, to determine the projects that they want to pursue that meet the requirements as outlined by Congress in the Restore Act. So that's happening. That's moving. They're having meetings. But we need some movement by the federal judge, and we need some movement by the Treasury.
Yes, Representative. The House has brought up 40 times national health care. Mm-hmm. I suppose you probably voted against it 40 times.
No.
My question is, why? When you know the Senate's not going to take it up and the president's going to veto it, why do we need to spend so much time on this particular issue?
Well, you're actually off a little bit in your facts there. There have been 9 of the 40 votes have dealt with issues that were in fact approved by the House, approved by the Senate, and signed into law by the president. So 9 of the 40, as you referenced, and one that deals with small business owners, and I know we have a lot here. One was the 1099 repeal. Because inside of the health care bill, and by the way, when you do stuff in a hurry, hurry is not of the devil, it is the devil. And the worst decisions I've ever made in my life, I made in a hurry. Like the 1099 revision, where small businesses are going to have to file for the federal government 1099s out the wazoo. We're going to continue, we're going to grow through monotony and through insanity, we're going to grow government. So everybody agreed. So one of those votes of the 40 was to repeal that. I'm very pleased that in very rare fashion, the House and the Senate and the White House agreed. It was signed into law. So to say that the 40 times, and I get this on Facebook and I get this emailed to me and this question asked to me a lot, but you're not being reported the facts that 9 of the 40 times have been revisions and necessary adjustments to the bill. So that's the fact. Yes, ma'am.
The House is, I gather, going to be taking up a water bill, big uh-huh. water bill, when you get back, and you're on one of the most important committees along with 5 other Florida representatives. And correct. I'd like to know, what are you going to do about water flow to Apalachicola Bay? Seems like y'all might be in a position to do something about that. The bay doesn't have years. The governor's correct. Filed a lawsuit, but that'll take forever.
Sure.
So the bay has a few months.
Okay. Look, that's one of the most difficult issues. Thank you for the question. That was one of the most difficult issues that we face. And I don't have to tell you, because the one thing that I have seen reported very accurately is the true challenges we face. I commend the media for really being on this story and educating, not just in Tallahassee or Panama City, but also in the small town papers around our district, understanding this issue. We are working extremely hard, and as you noted, there Florida has 6 members on the Transportation Committee. Now, the reason that Transportation hears this is because part of Transportation's responsibility is to oversee the Corps of Engineers. We produce the WERDA bill, bill, the Water Resource Development Act. That's the bill that we use to instruct the Corps of Engineers. One of the challenges that we face in the WERDA bill is that we're passionately desiring to find a solution, but I assure you that our good friends north of the state line are working just as passionately not to solve the issue in like manner. So I think they got people following. I'm sorry? There are no Georgians on that committee. That is very correct. But as you know, Senator Nelson, in the Senate WERDA bill, Senator Nelson included some language that, in his belief, would have addressed the issue in a way that's positive for Florida. And unfortunately, Mrs. Boxer pulled that language out of the Senate WERDA bill, and so therefore there's no solution. And I was with Senator Nelson last week down in Apalachicola, along with Senator Rubio, to highlight this issue, to put pressure on, or to educate people on just how dire, that the 90% reduction in oyster harvesting due to the water flow rates and the Corps, I think, misinterpreting of the water laws, because they will tell you, and they testified as much, that they do not have the responsibility in determining water flow and how it relates to the well-being of Apalachicola Bay. I simply disagree that you must take into consideration all of the environmental issues, as well as the transportation issues and other things, the quality of life of the American people down waterways when you're determining flow rates. And so our argument, and what we have met with Chairman Schuster and of the subcommittee Chairman Gibbs, is to push our efforts to make sure that the Corps, that if there's a 5% change in water flow, that cannot be instituted without permission of Congress. Now, what we've done is we've applied this not just to the ACF, but we think this needs to be applied nationwide. Because if you have the geographical disadvantage of being south and so many states above you, the same thing that's happening to us in the ACF is happening around the country. So we're trying to propose a solution to get not just regional support, not just the six members of our committee, but we're asking that this be a solution that can be applied more broadly across all 50 states so that people downstream are not at an economic disadvantage. And so we're pushing. I will say this. This is an issue that there is total bipartisan support. I initiated a letter to our chairman, Schuster, also to our ranking member and in the House, and it was signed by all 27 members of the Florida delegation. So it was signed by every Democrat, every Republican. We are in agreement on the WERDA bill. We're also in agreement on the WERDA bill and how the Corps should perform in relation to Florida ports, because we've got some dredging needs that we have to address so that the Florida ports are ready for business in 2015 when the Panama Canal reopens after its widening process, so that the 14th largest economy in the world can take advantage of the free trade agreements that we instituted last year on a bipartisan basis, signed into law by the president, trade agreements with Panama, Colombia, and South Korea. Florida is the second largest producer of specialty crops in America. Florida cattle stand to benefit through the creation of new jobs into our economy if we have access to the South Korean markets as far as beef. So we've got to get our ports ready. I'm leaving next week. I will be at Port Jacksonville next week. I will then go down to Port Miami. I also oversee our ports here, Port Panama City, and we're trying to get a new port off the ground in Port St. Joe and take advantage of some of the economic opportunities we have that exist in biomass to get us away from fossil fuel and also to take care of some of the regulations that Europe has instituted upon itself to convert to biomass and biofuels. So there's some huge job-creating opportunities that exist for us. And also I have served on the forestry subcommittee to follow that issue. We are blessed with pine in Northwest Florida. We are blessed with a geographical location, and I think that we've got to get the Word of Bill done in order to take advantage of those opportunities.
We have room for two more questions. Carlos Danger here has a question.
Oh, my goodness.
Florida commerce, industry, agriculture, and even higher education has a deep interest in immigration as an issue. When is the House going to begin to take up either the Senate bill or the components of the Senate bill?
The question was, because you may not be able to hear it, is that the economies of Florida, the communities of Florida, ag in Florida, have great interest in the subject of immigration. And if I stated it correct, when is the House going to take up the Senate version or different components of the Senate version regarding immigration? As you know, we have our Ways and Means Committee, or you may not know, the Ways and Means Committee, as well as our Judicial Committee, the Ag Committee, they are working as we speak, prior to our break, and then when we get back from our break, they are working on that very issue. So our bill will not be a product of a gang of eight. Our bill will be a product of the committee process, out open to where you can follow it on C-SPAN. You can observe those committee hearings, and you will hear the debate that goes on regarding those issues. So it will not be one bill. And by the way, it is not the responsibility of one House or one chamber to take up the bill of another chamber. We are a bicameral created body, the Congress. Many people, when there's a lot of blame to go around, say Congress. And when there's credit to go around, they conveniently say the Senate. There are two bodies. There are two chambers. There's the Senate chamber and the House chamber. By the way, I think we are the ones oftentimes with the most clarity, because we are the people's house. The Senate, I can't imagine running every 6 years. But I'm never away from you. I'm here a lot, as clearly outlined by the media. And so we're gonna weigh in on this. We're doing our bills now, and they will be, for example, there'll be a border security component. There is an interior security component. There is energy and workforce component dealing with E-Verify. Some of those components are also addressed in the Senate version, or are addressed in the Senate version. So we will we'll deal with legal immigration and how there needs to be reform there to improve the legal process by which someone wants to come to America. So this is an issue that must be addressed. Our current situation is not working. Not working at all. And so status quo is not going to work either. So we're doing that now. Chairman Goodlatte in Judiciary, Trey Gowdy is a dear friend of mine. He's a subcommittee chairman, and they're working. Trey is taking the lead on one component of that. So you're going to hear more when we get back. We're doing that work. And I would also ask you to go. Each committee has a website. So you can go to the House Judiciary Committee. You can go to the House Ways and Means Committee. You can go to the Homeland Security Committee. And you can find the hearing and the committee work agenda coming forward and look at what parts of our solutions are going to be addressed. So you will be on the front of getting that news, and you'll know the schedule.
Okay, one last question, Bam.
Thank you. First, I want to thank you for your advocacy on the Restore Act. I serve on the Wakulla County Citizen Advisory Council, so thank you for that. But
sure.
My question is about affordable health care.
Mm-hmm.
I think I heard you say earlier today that part of your opposition to affordable health care is that you don't want a bureaucrat standing between a patient and a doctor. So I would like to know how that pertains to a woman's right to privacy in making medical decisions.
Well, I think first of all, I don't think that part of the solution is to violate our right of conscience. Okay, and I think that that's an issue that you've heard a lot about. I do think that it is not proper for government or taxpayers to have to fund any decisions that a woman might legally make in this country right now. I do not believe that it is the responsibility of taxpayers to fund any of those decisions that they violate their own deeply held beliefs. And currently, the healthcare law puts us at odds oftentimes with a deeply held spiritual belief. The Catholic Church has been very clear on their opposition here. So what a woman chooses to do with her body is her decision. And what she chooses with her doctor is her decision. That is her right. But I do not believe it fundamentally supports freedom if we are making Americans who have a belief system differently, that they have the responsibility to fund that individual's desire. And so therefore, it is, and I respectfully put forth my my objection. And so I think that there should not be a bureaucrat. I think a doctor and her, that client relationship, that it should be honored at all times. And what we're seeing now is we're seeing delays in the decision-making process because we've got to get permission. We've got to get a bureaucrat to sign off on a particular test that has been requested. I think that's a dangerous road. And I know of no way to produce greater quality by limiting our choices. That's my biggest problem. It doesn't work. And it just doesn't work. But to your issue, the woman should have the right to make her decisions. But those decisions should not cost those who fundamentally, spiritually, or what morally disagree, who are being given the bill to fund that. That's my problem. And our founding fathers weighed in very clearly on the right of conscience. I want to thank all of you for allowing me to be here today. Bill, thank you. Steve, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much for coming, folks. We'll see you sometime in September.
You've been listening to a delayed broadcast of the August 21st, 2013 luncheon meeting of the Capital Tiger Bay Club. This program was recorded at Tallahassee's Donald L. Tucker Civic Center. Listen again next time for our next luncheon meeting of the Capital Tiger Bay Club on WFSU-FM.